And welcome back, everyone. It is a BurtCast. I've been off for a little while. I apologize. I've been busting my ass. Part of life is working. And I pay my bills by being on the road. And being on the road means I can't be around great comics and can't have amazing conversations. And quite honestly, I don't get to hang out with my wife. And that's why we're talking right now together. We have one microphone. It is late at night. We're supposed to go to bed so we can wake the girls up early and go to school. We've bought pepper spray and batons. Liam, what did you want to talk about?
Well, Bert, I wanted to talk about Harry's Razors. Harry's.com. That's HARRYS.com. It's this new razor blade you've been using. And I have to tell you, on the body part you've been using it on, it's pretty fabulous. Harry's will ship for free razors and razor blades to your house.
I did not expect you to say that.
What?
I didn't expect you to say that.
You didn't?
No.
Well, I mean, everybody knows you have a beard, but not everybody knows that you still shave. And it's not your chest. And it's not your legs.
Keep going. Tell me information.
It's a very special body part. So, Harry's.com has razors and razor blades. They're German-made razor blades. And Harry's starter kit is just $15. And that includes a razor, three blades, and your choice of Harry's shave cream or foaming gel, whichever you prefer. Which do you prefer, babe, the gel or the cream?
Gel.
Gel. He prefers the gel. As an added bonus, you can get $5 off your first purchase with my code, BurtCast. So after you use your code, you get an entire month's worth of shaving for just $10. So when you check out, just put in the purchase code BurtCast.
Spell it out.
BERTCAST. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I haven't used the razor myself, but the effects of the razor are super smooth. Is that good?
It's perfect.
Okay, good.
So check out Harry's Razor. Harry's Razors?
Harry's.com.
Check out Harry's.com. All the monies that we make from these advertisements go directly to my wife. So please use that coupon code. All right. Let's do an episode of a podcast. It is my pleasure to sit with a woman that's very opinionated, very interesting, very fascinated, and her podcast is called Dork Forest, and it's all about hanging out with people that are obsessed with things. So she sits with people that are obsessed with professional wrestling, with fishing, like anything that you're obsessed with, she's interested in listening to.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so she is a very fascinated person. And very fascinating. She's been a stand-up comic since 1986. A massive respect to an OG in the game. By the way, that's the first time she's ever been referred to as an OG in the game.
What's an OG?
Original gangster.
Oh. Yep.
OG. OG. I don't even know if anyone can hear you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the BurtCast is back. We're hammering them out for the next 5 weeks, because I'm doing one every single day this week, and I will be releasing two a week, because I'm going to start doing a guest on Tuesday and a personal solo one on Thursday or Friday. So, yeah, that's right. Bill Burr is inspiring. He inspires everybody. So today's guest, without further ado, OG in the comedy game, straight out of Milwaukee, Jackie Cation.
This is
the podcast.
I think we're
going to
spend way
too
much money. That is beautiful.
Isn't
that cool?
Pretty
neat.
Yeah. We only had one request and they came with a pretty old screen, and I said, I want to be able to sit outside and watch TV. So I thought they'd put like an outdoor TV or whatever.
They just did this.
But they just did this so I could. But then he wanted to sit at his desk.
Here, Jackie, grab a seat over there.
There you go. How bad.
Priscilla, are you really going to be in this the whole time? Doug Benson told me, he's like, next time you do a podcast, put your camera a lot closer and have it more intimate.
Yeah.
And I was
like,
okay.
Periscoping?
No. I got a GoPro rolling.
Oh, okay.
So is this going to be a fully encompassing podcast? Are you going to be on this? Okay. Okay.
You're affecting change at a grassroots level. That's what that is. I enjoy.
Are you going to take this?
Is she going to bother you?
Well, no, but.
It could be.
No, because what she does is if you don't look at her, she'll start growling.
Oh,
but
yeah.
She's already started facing this way.
But you'll see, like, as I talk to you, she'll look at me and just go, it's not threatening. It's a way of speaking,
it's
but
like,
it's just
hey,
going, Am
I
and
not?
Then you,
yeah.
And then it turns into a game with her.
Okay.
She's all right.
She's fine.
Okay.
She's facing this way. So she's not asking for love. She wants to fall asleep.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Jackie.
Hi.
Is it you like how we just roll right into this?
Yeah, that's fine. It's beautiful. Let's. You haven't been on mine yet, have you?
No, but I'll probably end up doing yours right now because I'm obsessed with so much shit.
Really?
I have massive obsessions. If you haven't listened to Jackie's podcast, Dork Forest, Rangers of the Dork Forest are
your
team.
That's it. Those are my peeps. Those are my peoples. And they are self-appointed Rangers of the Dork Forest. But it's super fun because they crack me up because my brother started listening to the show, and none of my family has ever listened to anything. They're like, oh, stand-up comedy. I don't enjoy it. But you have a good time. And I was like, I don't like money laundering. Congratulations, whatever you do for a living. And so, I mean, I don't know how to talk to people.
I don't know how to talk to anyone who doesn't do what we do.
Right. So my brother started listening. I got a call from him yesterday. He said, I have met Sarah Vowell. I don't know why you, like, there was no restraining order. And I was like, you had a giant crush on, and I was like, well, now he's going to listen because I talk about my family a fair amount.
Well, that's the crazy thing is I forget how
what
honest I am on a podcast. And I've talked about my
that's
daughter.
That's why there's such a treat for people.
Yeah. I think it's like I go to stand up now and people are like, tell that story about Isla having a hard time reading. And I'm like, what? And they heard it on the podcast.
Right.
And sometimes you fuck around and you'll say something that isn't like you're fucking with your friend.
Yeah.
Like I said something to Ari about something. I don't even want to bring it up because people talk
about
it.
Got all sad.
Well, no, they bring it up to me all the time and I don't know what I said. But
right.
I know it's not true. But I know I was fucking with Ari.
Right.
So I just kind of was like.
So you might have said something, some nightmarish like something racially or sexually inappropriate.
Nope.
No,
nope,
not even.
No, well, you'd considering the conversation with Ari, you'd think so, but
I would think so. I would think that if Ari Shaffir was in the conversation, that something would have been said that later you went, no, I'm actually not a dick.
He is the last. I believe the last of the people. Like I look at comedy generationally.
Okay,
and he's from that last of the generation of like, nope, 100% honesty. I say exactly what I think, exactly what I feel. I gotta say it all. Like unfiltered 100% because I'm not that guy anymore. I was when I first started.
Okay.
But I definitely am cognizant of the way my words are perceived.
Well, the thing is all of us have no filter when we first start. We're just trying to get a reaction from the audience, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, I'm going to be talking. Like I had a fascinating bit when I first started about how, I don't know if you've ever thought of this, a great premise. Batman and Robin might have been gay because of that pole and the spandex. Jesus Christ, Cation. Anyway, so, but I mean, like you know, I was just saying anything really to get any sort of, I was like, let's talk about the inside of my vagina. I'll talk about the inside of my ear. But now that I've been doing it for 1 million years, I have some filter. It's not great, and it's not always. And I tend to say things like, but whatever. But I do want there to be a fucking punchline. It is not just shock jock stuff anymore.
Right, right.
Like I have a joke about how I would rather vote. I hate Scott Walker. He's the governor of my state.
Yeah.
And he's destroying my public school system that I went through and got a pretty good education, and he's destroyed it. Now, and then I say that I would rather vote for Bill Cosby for president than Scott Walker because Bill Cosby rapes people one at a time, Bert. One at a time. Right? And so that is a joke that I don't write jokes like that.
Yeah.
I write the longest fucking stories in the world.
Yeah.
So I wrote that joke and I'm like, I can do that joke anywhere. And no, you can't. You can't do that joke anywhere because people get sad. People get sad about Bill Cosby. People get sad about rape. And I'm like, well, I'm going to do it anyway because I wrote that joke.
Yeah.
But so I get what Ari's saying. But I want there to be a punchline. There just has to be. It can't just be no filter.
I agree. I mean, I think some people mistake, when you're early on, they mistake, young comics mistake aggressiveness and confidence and fearlessness for sense of humor.
Right.
Like, I would take big swinging chances.
And you need to.
And when I was younger, and I was fearless. I'm not saying I'm fearful now. But I definitely...
You have a sense of proportion. It isn't fear. You can say... Bert Kreischer can say whatever he wants, right? I mean, and you do, I think. Yeah. But there has to be a nice... It's gotta have a twist. There's got to be some point to it, to some extent.
And by the way, I'll say it on the other side of the fence, in that I've had non-aggressive, pointless stories that are just fucking pointless. That I'm sitting there going, like, last night I had this bit about scuba diving. I'm trying to talk about anxiety in my stand-up. No, I'm not trying to be like
for or against.
For, oddly enough, because I believe that when you have an anxiety attack, it is one of the very few times in life where you know exactly what you want and you don't want.
And it
literally is ice cold and burning hot, and you know where you stand.
Yeah.
And
you're a baby.
It's very primal. It's infantile almost. Yeah. It's like, and so I've been dealing with that because working at Travel Channel, doing the stuff I do, I do have a lot of anxiety attacks.
Right.
And I'm going to therapy about it, and I'm trying to explore it.
Right.
But
there's got to be something funny about it. There has to be.
You can't just talk about it.
Right.
And plus,
the only way you can deal with it as a comic is to find the fucking funny.
Right.
Because that will make the anxiety. You have to address it. That's what they say for everybody. But as a comic, you have to address it. And genuinely, I think, in my opinion, make it funny.
Well, what we used to do, I say we, but like what we used to do, I believe, when we're younger comics is we found the funny first and then worked backwards. When you're older, you go, I want to talk about this subject. Where is the funny in that?
Right.
And you explore forwards.
Right. I have never done any jokes about my weight or my looks in the first probably year and a half. And I'll do like a throwaway line of, I'm overweight, consider it addressed, this type of thing, right? Because I don't have any jokes about it.
Yeah.
But recently, because I'm getting more people... I'm very grateful. Everybody in Hollywood has been very nice. But people are like, no, I love what you do. Can you do something about what you look like? And I'm like, I don't think I haven't tried. I mean, I have genuinely looked like some version of this since I have been 16 years old, give or take 20 pounds, right? Yeah. And I've tried all the different things, right? Where you eat yoga mat food, you hire someone to slap sandwiches out of your hand, you hire someone to poke you into doing sit-ups. I've done all the things where you eat no meat, only meat. I've done all the things, right? And it doesn't really make a huge amount of difference. And I can't really tell because I'm not really a person who looks in the mirror. I only look in the mirror from the neck up. Like, I'm not looking at my ass.
Yeah.
You have to look at, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I look neck up, I brush my teeth, I brush the front of my hair, and then I head out the door. If there's trouble.
The front of my hair.
My front of my head. I deal with the front of it. If there's, like, if I've put my shirt on backwards, I get that from you out here in the world, right? I don't get a lot of it. But then I was thinking about, because mostly I've just done what Americans do, which is throw money at it.
Yeah.
And I will continue to throw money at it as much as the market can bear to try to fucking fix this. And it's Oprah. But I was thinking about Oprah, who has thrown all the money, right? She has all the money, and she's thrown more money than all of us at it. And yet, think about it. Oprah kind of looks like this. She looks like me. And the only difference is she has enough money that she has people who go, well, you can't go out looking like that. So they push her back into the house and redo her hair and her teeth and her clothes. And, you know, she's got, and I don't, my 40 grand a year is not going to be able to match her 40 billion a year. It's just not going to be able to do it. And the real problem that I actually do have to address is the fact that it's a math problem. I don't eat shit. I just eat all of it. I eat all of the very beautiful organic foods that are put in front of me.
It's a math problem is exactly, it's so simple. I remember saying to Bobby Kelly one time, you look great, man. How'd you lose weight? And he said, I ate less calories than I burned.
Like,
and I thought he was being a dick.
But he's not.
But he was just saying,
It's
no.
Genuinely, I eat a nice big breakfast and then just hours later, a big lunch. And then I have like two or three pieces of fruit during the day. And then at dinner, guess what I do? I have a nice big dinner. It's America. I don't know how to, I mean, I wish I, and some years are better than other years where I eat less and I lose 20 pounds.
Sometimes I wish I could get to the place where sometimes I'm aware. I'm very aware of the calories. Sometimes I'm not, and it seems like I'm doing, and I start losing weight naturally.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like I'm very active.
Yeah.
And then like this, I'm going through a stint right now. I'm the biggest I've ever been.
And it's
for me, I'm the opposite of you. I'm very aware of my weight gain.
And you're in it, right?
I'm in it, and it's like I'm panic eating, and I'm drinking. Yeah. I drink a lot, so that is one of the biggest things.
Adult beverages, the alcohol. Oh, yeah.
And like, yeah. I just switched to vodka.
Because it's less calories or
model
something?
Some male model told me it's in his contract to drink vodka soda, and I was like, oh, really? Oh, that'll make my
Well,
drink.
That's what... I remember, because when I first moved here, I was only drinking... I had just gotten my first DUI when I first moved to Los Angeles.
Really?
And get out there. Anyway, but when I got it, I was like, I had switched. I was like, I'm not going to have shots. I'm not going to drink. Because I drink like... I have a problem with alcohol. Yeah. And so I don't drink anymore because...
How long are you not drinking?
For years. For like over 15 years.
Oh, really?
And that's what I do. I do the thing where you have to... Like, all I want to... Because I have an addictive personality, I guess, because when I start drinking, I don't stop drinking. And I also want to drink like someone on the Travel Channel,
yeah.
Right? Like, I want to match you shot for shot and then go out and find women and I'm straight. So it doesn't make any fucking sense, right? And you're just like, no, I want to drink like a man and then go find a woman.
But you started stand up in that. I want to say like in that culture... Like I'm always,
it can be now too, but I mean, yes, in the 80s is when I started.
I want to say this, and I want you to, your honest, I mean, I know you give me your honest opinion, but I want to say this, but, and I don't mean this to sound like you've been doing it a long time, because you have. You've been doing stand-up since
I like, count the 80s as 1 year, but I started in 84.
So, what I find fascinating about that is you have maintained in a business that tears through talent, and... In a weird way, the industry has changed, I would say, more to your personality than not.
So beautiful. It is one of the... When I moved to Los Angeles, I think, in 97, right?
Yeah.
And it was the height of, or the beginning of that alt thing.
Yeah.
With like Janine Garofalo and Patton and Paul F. Tompkins and Karen Kilgariff. All those people, they were storytelling comics. They somebody asked me in 90, I think it was 98, my buddy K.P. Anderson. You might know K.P.
I know K.P. very
right?
well.
A Minneapolis comic.
Yeah.
And I'm a Minneapolis comic, so...
But you started in Madison, right?
Right, Madison, Wisconsin. And then, because I'm from Wisconsin. And then, but the... The crazy thing about KP was because he had lived here for a couple of years, and he was like, hey, I want to do some of those ulti rooms because we're comics.
Yeah.
We want to do every fucking room there is.
Yeah.
Any room. I don't care. Is there a laundromat that's doing stand-up comedy? Can I get a work in? Right? And so he's like, but they won't book me because I'm not alternative. What is that? And I said, as far as I can tell, you tell the story of how you wrote the joke, and then you tell the punchline that you came up with. And because that is how I have always done stand-up comedy. And because it's not that there aren't punchlines in alt comedy in 1998, in 2000. It's just you get there by the most circuitous route. And I, Chatty fucking Magoo Cation, have always been the longest talker in the world. Every joke I've written has started out as 6 minutes.
It's so funny. I never, when I started, I knew who you were. And I never considered you an alt comic at all. And I still to this day don't. But I do know that the...
Because they move towards me.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. But I do know, I was aware that people like you who are working clubs were also at times swimming upstream against your natural habits or your natural talents.
Okay.
Like you were forced into a mold of a comic where you wanted to do you were naturally doing something very different than everyone else was doing.
Yeah, and well, and when I did like one night or like you know when you do Yoder and Mueller and, yeah. and sort of Tribble out here, but I mean it's they're one nighter runs, and what you do is you drive from night to night and you do stand up. Those are there's six career drunks sitting at the bar trying to play trivia, and you have come into their world yeah. and you do stand up and
that is not and for people listening that is not alt friendly. At all.
And so you have to figure out a way to reach them. And so I did. And one of the ways I did it, and it's something that I've tried to undo, is I talk very fast on yeah. stage. I'm more than willing to do an hour of material in 20 minutes. And I'm like, you can fucking laugh later. You can laugh later. Because right now I've got to fulfill my contractual obligations because I need this $125. Or whatever the hell it yeah. is, right? And so... So it isn't ideal, but it does. I mean, it teaches you all every room you go up at. It teaches you a different weirdo lesson.
It's those rooms are so good. I always try, and I don't dislike it. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. The traditional stand-ups yeah. versus alt stand-ups. I've always been more fond. I mean, I've always fit in better in traditional stand-up rooms, like hanging with those people.
Oh right.
But I always artistically, I found the alt clubs more what I do.
Right, like and drawn to
it. And I know people probably go, really? But I'm a storyteller and
yeah.
stand-up comedy clubs, doing 7 minutes in a stand-up comedy club is not conducive for me and what I do. Like, I went to the Comedy Store and I was like, and they're like 7 minutes. And I was like...
Okay, that's one story.
I go, that's one story.
It's so actually, at this point, it's one story plus a minute I don't know what to do with, which
Thank
is
you.
So irritating because I'm like, well, okay, I'll do that one bit. And I was like, but I have the hardest time just throwing, it's like throwing away money
yeah.
to throw away that minute where you're like, yeah. well, I guess I'll be running the light. Somebody said to me, they said, okay, it's a 10-minute set. And I said, I'm so sorry, I have 2 6-minute bits. Yeah. I'll be doing 12 minutes. And yeah. And she just looked at me and she said, really? And I said, yeah, is that all right? And she goes, well, now that I know, yeah, it's fine.
I was in Montreal, and they were like, so you're doing, I guess, 7 minutes. Or I think it was 7 minutes yeah. for some TV taping.
Oh, right.
And I go, great. And he goes, so when do you want your light? And I go, oh, there's no giving me the light. When the story's over, I'll finish it.
Right, and then you like, could cut it into whatever chunks you yeah. want.
He was like, wait, what do you mean? I go, when I'm done with the story, you'll see. I go, thank you.
That is the best, by the way. I did a couple of years ago, I did one of those shows. It was HBO, it was the HBO Canada version of some damn
yeah,
show.
That's what I did.
Okay, so they were like, well, what's your last line?
And
so
they go, what's your last line? And I was like, I don't know.
Judah Friedlander told me to do exactly what you just said, which is, thank you, good night.
Yeah.
Because I told them the actual last line of the joke, and they cut off the last punchline. I wanted to choke everyone involved. And
really?
Yeah, the poor woman, she just started the music over the last punchline. And I was like, all right, then. I do that cat joke, and the last line is meow, meow or something. Who yeah. knows what the fuck it is? But and that's the last line. And I get off stage, and Judah was like, oh, I should have told you. You should always say the last line is, thank you, good night. Because
yeah.
then they don't screw up any of your jokes. And
yeah.
I was like, okay. Note to self and note to all comics listening, because it's a learned skill. You do, you know, what they still paid me. It's no offense.
those things, I don't have no interest. I have very little interest in doing short sets these days, unless I'm working on a story and yeah. I really kind of just want to work on the story. Like, I really like open mic rooms.
Yeah.
I love them, going in there and just going, hey, the bar is not that high. No one knows who I am. I'm not saying that people know who I am anyway, but like if I go, say I go to the...
But you can kind of strong arm your way into a not 3 minute set.
Right.
Is that what you do? Because that's what I... It is... sorry, young new comics. If I go to an open mic, I'm like, can I please have 6 minutes?
Yeah.
And But I don't run the light. Like yeah. I'm not... I don't Damon Wayans the damn thing
yeah.
and just keep going. Like I did a show at the Improv the other night where you get to pick everyone, right? Where it's Jackie Cation and Friends, it was called.
Yeah.
And so I picked 5 comics that I wanted to see. Well, day of... I get an email from the Improv. Hey, Todd Barry's looking for a set tonight. We said he could do 10 minutes during your set. And I was like, well, I love Todd Barry. Fine, I'll cut. And I was supposed to do 40 minutes. I was yeah. supposed to get to, but I was hosting, luckily. So I was like, okay, well, I'll do 10 and 30 and it'll be fine. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do 10 and 20. Fine. And then I get to the club and Jay Leno and Judd Apatow are like, hey, we want to do guest sets. And I was like, well, they're not my friends. Yeah. And Jackie Cation and friends. And so did you want to? And I mean, there's no way to.
I wouldn't mind being your friend, Judd Apatow, but you got to put the time
in. I can totally be your friend, but we got to have like lunch or something.
I'm going to need your number.
I'm going to need your number. And then you're not even going to reintroduce me to Jimmy Miller, who doesn't remember who I am. No, fair enough. Okay, well, then we are not friends, but we could be friends if we hung out.
Do you put
more.
Your friends in movies?
Right. I don't need to be in your movie, though. If you need a PTA mom, this is available. And Yeah, but obviously you can't say no to Jay Leno and Judd Apatow.
Yeah,
and
right.
Because the audience will be psyched.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't get to do any time.
Yeah.
I did a 12 up front, because that's what I'm doing these days if I'm doing a short set. I'm so sorry. I'm doing 12. And so I did 12, and then I brought up everybody I wanted to on my team, right, that I had booked.
Marie Bamford?
Well, I asked a lot of people who were famous who could have filled the room a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to have you anytime.
I'd love to do it.
Oh, good. Because, but I ended up with the greatest, because there's so, we're in a golden age of stand-up comedy right now. You could pick, there's 50 people at any given moment that I will stay in the room and watch.
There's a lot of really good comics right now.
It's
I think comedy's at the best place it's ever been, and I think that it's also allowing the most voices it's ever allowed.
Yeah, like my lineup was Cameron Esposito.
Oh, I know her.
She's gay, and she's smart, and she has a side mullet.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, I know her. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, Baron Vaughn, who...
I know Baron Vaughn.
Destroys.
Yeah.
The guy, he's on Frankie and Grace, Grace and Frankie, whatever, Netflix with...
I just know him from stand-up.
Yeah, and he is one... He's, quite honestly, is one of my favorite comics working today. It's a beautiful treat to watch Baron Vaughn do stand-up comedy. Find him, do whatever you want. Anyway, my buddy Jim Wooster, nobody fucking knows who Jim Wooster is, and he only does stand-up when I insist that he does stand-up. So it's always a joy. And then it was, Lori Kilmartin.
I love Lori Kilmartin.
Lori Kilmartin, amazing comic.
Amazing.
And Solomon Giorgio. Do you know Solomon Giorgio?
I know the name.
He is a tall, also gay, black, but one of my favorite introductory jokes of his that he did on Conan last time was, I am a tall, very beautiful black man, and so I am a waiter in West Hollywood. And he talks in this very measured kind of hello. Yeah. And he immigrated with his parents from Ethiopia when he was like 12.
Oh,
and
really?
So he has this sort of great attitude. It's so many different voices.
There's so many. I had a really good time at Montreal this year watching people.
Yeah.
Like, I got to be honest with you.
Who'd you get to see that was just a treat?
There's two different things. There's treats, and then there's people that I like. I don't know what this feeling is. It's inspiration. It's somewhat jealousy at the fact that I'm not working that hard.
Like, oh, okay.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
Oh, right. You know what? I have seen him once and I can't picture him, but I remember his name.
Wait,
Italian, right?
Italian.
I saw his long set at Punchline.
God damn.
And it.
It
was, talk about a goddamn treat. That guy was amazing.
He told a story that had no real, like, it wasn't like Ari and I ended up the next day talking about story, about good stories and what you need for a good story, and like kind of obsessing about it a little bit. And his story was okay, but it destroyed, and it had me dying laughing, cuz he's fucking worked the muscle that he knows how to be funny. He knows subtlety.
He plays it like a violin,
like,
man.
Like a prodigy.
Dude's a virtuoso.
Yeah, and I watched him, and I was like, oh my God.
Because you look at him, when I looked at him, I was like, oh, that guy's a little bro-y. And then I watched him do an hour, and in the course of that hour, one of the things that was the most beautiful thing in the world for me was how much he clearly, like, loved his wife.
Oh, yeah.
And how OCD and sort of twitchy he is. I mean, that's what many of his stories are about.
He's very OCD in real life.
And it was the revelation. I mean, that's what I want to see. Like, Jay Leno the other night did a story about being kind of an old guy. And he said, you know, you hit on women or you flirt with women. And then he told a story about how Jay Leno flirts with women. And it is one of the sweetest things. Like, you'd never have any idea what the hell Jay Leno's like from his stand-up, because he's very jokey, right?
Yeah. It's very, like,
This is how Jay Leno hits on women. This is Jay Leno's idea of flirting. He's driving his gajillion-dollar car. He sees a pretty woman at a car next to him, and he smiles at her, and she smiles back, and he's like, that can make my day, you guys. And I was like, wow, that is the nicest catcall ever.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, like, I'll see a pretty woman, and I'm like, hello. And she'll say hello back, and I'm like, she said hi to me.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, you're awesome. Yeah. It made me like Jay Leno like I haven't since 1990.
I'm always impressed. I'm always impressed when a guy like that, like I said, this is probably now, it has to be at least 11 years ago, 10 years ago, when Dice wasn't working. I think he's working.
He wasn't working his angle?
He wasn't working.
He was just working.
All I know is that, and I don't want to speak of Dice or about his career. I don't know anything about his career. I mean, I know that I was a fan when we were younger and he blew up and then he like went through some hard times, I think, but maybe not. Maybe he was always working the road. But he wasn't working Madison Square Garden at this time. And he was in the green room at the Comedy Store. And I was only there because Louis Anderson asked me to do, he was doing Sunday nights.
Oh, nice.
And it was like, I want to say, and now memories always are fucking incorrect, but I want to say it was like Roseanne Barr, Chris Rock, Andrew Dice Clay, Louis Anderson, like myself, Steve Byrne, and Brian Scalaro. Like,
that's insane.
And and Andrew Dice Clay was telling a story about taking his kids to the park and having to bring the bikes.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. He wasn't trying to be funny. He was just telling about his day.
In the green room?
In the green room. And he was like, the kids apparently didn't want, he packed the bikes. The bikes, I got the fucking bikes, the thing's hitting me in the shin. I got to get them in the truck. Bikes don't go, he's complaining about putting bikes in the truck. And it's Andrew Dice Clay complaining about it. And then he's getting this thing where the kids aren't even riding the bikes. And he goes, I'm sitting by the car going, hey, what about the bikes?
And you're like, why would you do that on stage every time you got on stage?
He went on stage, he was like, TikTok, and everyone goes nuts. And
they go nuts. But you're like, but that was a beautiful story. Please tell that story again.
It was an insight about you that I'm blessed to have shared that you should share with everybody.
Everyone wants to hear that story, Dice.
Yeah.
Please tell the story of where you're a human being. Because that's my favorite kind of comedy. I mean, you look at like Kyle Kinane and any you know, anybody where you're like, even
what were you gonna say?
I was like, even Mike Birbiglia, which feels like a dicky thing to say.
It feels like it, but I see what you're saying.
But because Birbiglia, I always think of he doesn't know this, he's my arch enemy, because I feel I love his career
because
he's like this darling of the NPR set, and I'm like, oh, they would love me if they knew me. Like, if I were glass-liked me, if Nathan Lane wanted to, I don't know, maybe touch me, I might I'm such a dick. But I
mean, No.
But I think that it's like, I think that they would, and you get what you get in this business, right? And I feel so grateful and blessed to get to do it for a living.
Yeah.
I do have to work on it. I mean, I think we all have to work on not being bitter or angry.
It's tough. It's tough not to go, like, I'll tell you my honest feeling was like, I hate that I look the way I look because I can't work at UCB, and I think I do very well in that room.
Would do it. And the thing is you look like half of the guys who work UCB.
No, but...
But you come from a different...
I come from a different background.
You come from... So there's a lateral move that would be hard, because people would be like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
It turns out I'd talk out of my joke hole and tell jokes, and you would enjoy them.
There's a lot of clubs I'd like to work because I'd like to... And I'd like to work differently than I normally would work. Like, but just like to fuck around and have a good time.
Yeah,
but I look like a homophobic...
You look a little... You come from sort of the bro-y side of stand-up?
I have a friend who I will not mention...
Fair enough. But, I mentioned Mike Birbiglia.
Okay. Her name's Anahid.
Okay.
And
is she Armenian?
I think she's half.
Yeah.
No, I think she's half Iranian, half Christian, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's Armenian. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
So,
it's all good. I'm Armenian.
So she's she said we were trying to put this project together.
Yeah.
And she said, it's like I need. She called me a bro comic, and I was never heard that before. She's like, yeah, there's a lot of bro comics that I was listening to, and she is not, like, she is, I mean, probably Uber, I'll tell you off air more.
Yeah.
But like, she is like hardcore feminist, liberal, yeah, like an NPR type person. Yeah. And I heard bro comic and I went, that's really interesting. And I was like, you know, I think the bro comic thing gets such a bad rap, but you know what it is that bro comics always fit in at the Funny Bones and the Improvs with, yeah, the bro managers and the bro wait staff.
Right. And you play video rooms. Games that the bro grammars made. And, you know, it's like that. But there's bro comics and then there's like slow clap jock bro comics, right?
Like what's that?
The slow clap jock guys are like, no, I want to, it's like Hardwick, you know, yeah, it's like Chris Hardwick or Jay Moore or guys who are like, no, I'm a nerd. I'm a giant nerd. You guys don't get this. And they want to hang out with nerds, but they are also like sort of assholes kind of like them. But also they're like, but I'm not an asshole. So it's not my fault that assholes like me. Can, yeah, I please perform to people that aren't assholes? And I'm not saying that.
No. Yeah, I know.
But there's different kinds of comedy fans, and the horrible comedy fans at UCB are sort of these sort of kickbacky kind of like hipstery kind of guys who are like, yeah, don't do a joke that I think you wrote. And did you work on that? And you're like, yeah, I worked on it. It turns out that's what I do for a living. I write jokes. I am a monkey for your entertainment.
It's like Geraldo said.
And yeah, don't make, said that. Yeah, well, and don't make me. There's a fair amount in what is left of the alt-y comedy scene where you have to appear like you're not trying.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, like, did you ever see The Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Yeah.
One of the greatest movies in the world.
Yeah.
But he nailed it. It's Wes Anderson, right? Yeah. So I sat through that movie thoroughly enjoying it, and it is a beautiful movie, but it has that laid back sort of like, no, me and my friends just got together on a weekend. You know, my friends, Meryl Streep and George Clooney. And then we did stop action video.
Yeah.
We just threw it together. And you're like, no, you didn't. This took 3 years of just head down nerds working their asses off,
yeah,
and it is gorgeous and beautiful and you should be proud of it. And he is proud of it, but nobody has nailed that laid back, like, no, I just made a diamond out of nothing,
yeah,
more than Wes Anderson. And it's something that it's, I don't know how to define it except for by that horrible, that very long story.
We'll see you guys.
See you guys later. It's been great talking to you. Anyway, so, but.
No, I know what you mean. I like, there are comics that you feel like they are putting it together. Like Stanhope's someone. Every time I watch Stanhope,
yeah,
I feel like he's just putting it together as he comes up with it. And then he's very adamant about going, no. That's the way I present the material. I'm working, yes, on this shit.
Right. Yeah. If there's, it's like whenever somebody says, they're like, well, they wonder about people's work ethic because they make it look so easy.
Oh, people think I...
You're the biggest slacker in the world.
Yeah, and I go, no. I literally stayed up all night last night. Like, I woke up at 3 thinking about this joke, this scuba diving thing, and I was like, I'm not putting the work in this. And then I was like, what is scuba diving technically? And I started trying to break it down. And then I started trying to describe everything, like go back. That's one of the things that really good comics do is they take the little detail and just fucking blow it up. And I was, yeah, I was like, okay, let me fucking work. And so I was up all night working on this joke in my head. I mean, that's the way my, yeah, process. And, yeah, then I do that and then I take it on stage and I work on it there.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's it's, you know, people say it about Bamford. Marie is one of my best friends and has been for 25 years.
Okay, the way you feel about Ira Glass,
yeah,
I always feel about Maria Bamford.
Oh, is that you want her to like her, well, like
I,
you more?
I mean, there's a bunch of people that I just never really clicked in that scene, but like I really enjoy watching her.
Yeah. For my money, she is the best working comic today.
Like, I listen.
Like, nobody comes up with topics that she does. Nobody. But, and people are, they're like, well, I want to, you know, there's this attitude of like, well, she's kind of flaky. And you're like, I don't think you understand how much work goes into what the fuck she's doing.
Well, she's very honest. I loved the podcast you guys did where you guys ate at Hugo's.
Mm.
It's really cool because it's like being a fly on the wall, really.
Yeah.
But she was
so sick of doing podcasts at that point that I asked her if she wanted to do my podcast. She said, only if I get to interview you about the things that you never talk about, and then she just grilled me about chicken and romance novels.
Yeah.
Which, and I don't, and it's funny, I do a bit about romance novels now because that episode of The Dork Forest is probably 3 years old now, 4 years old. And so right after that, I started working on that bit, and that bit turned into like a signature bit, but I never would have admitted, because nobody wants to hear that people read romance novels. But now I see, because I do that bit, that fans send me articles. They're like, oh, people are lauding romance novels now. And I was like, well, they shouldn't be lauding them.
That's the coolest thing about podcasting, is that you put out there what you like.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about yours. You put out there what you like or what you're obsessed about, and then people send you, oh, did you know about this?
And you didn't.
I didn't.
And then I forward it to whoever. Like, they're like, oh, do you love that Vice Presidential, like there was a guy that was just on who talked about a bunch of vice presidents. He's a vice presidential nerd. And you're like, well, first of all, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Second of all, that's fascinating, because he had these weird stories like about McKinley's first vice president, the guy before Teddy Roosevelt. And you're like, what guy? And
yeah.
And
wait, is that the guy that died?
Yeah.
And then Teddy Roosevelt had to take his place?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Don't get me on Teddy Roosevelt. I'm obsessed with that motherfucker.
Oh, that guy. What a psychopath. I was psyched that
What a psychopath. People don't understand. This guy went down. He had his horses taken from New York all the way down to Cuba so he could fight in the
Spanish American War.
And he had Brooks Brothers.
Orchestrated.
Brooks Brothers made him suits. But meanwhile, there are real soldiers in this war, and he shows up out of a catalog.
Yes.
And then parades himself around. But like, I'm
J. Crew guy. Yeah,
I went through an obsession with him. I go through these obsessions, and what I do is I listen to stuff while I sleep.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Now my obsessions.
How does your wife?
I'm on the road.
Oh, fair enough.
35 days a month.
Oh, probably. Fair enough.
I mean, I'm on the road. Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
So I listen right now. My obsession is David Foster Wallace, and so I'm listening to every interview that he's ever done, and I'm listening to.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm listening to Infinite Jest.
I had a David Foster Wallace dork on Josh Gondelman. You know, yeah. Josh Gondelman?
No.
He writes for the John Oliver show.
Oh, really?
A stand-up comic, New York guy. Really funny. Really funny guy. And he loved David Foster Wallace. And and the thing is I was like, oh, the Hunter S. Thompson of your generation? I get it. And I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And I called him George Wallace twice during the podcast.
My wife called him George Wallace. They go, very different Wallace.
Right. Also,
very different Wallace.
Also entertaining.
Yeah.
Different person. Different person.
I'm going through that obsession right now. I'm going through, I have a, this is, they hate, my dogs are obsessed with fucking garbage men.
Right, they're like, you guys dealing with the detritus of humanity. I can't handle it, and I can't handle the truth. Mona, is that the dog's
name? That's Mona.
Hey, Mona.
Monita.
Hey, Mona. Buddy.
Mona. Mona was brought up in the barrio, and she was a rescue from the barrio, so she had a fear of Mexican men.
Oh.
So anytime she saw a Mexican guy, she'd lose her fucking shit, which is semi-problematic in a city where there's a lot of Mexican men.
Where everyone is. You know, it's funny. It's my in-laws are from a little town up in the Central Valley of California.
Oh, yeah?
Just a crazy. I don't know if you ever saw a can of olives. Lindsay Olives?
Yeah.
They live in Lindsay, California.
I know, but I know where all those olive trees are. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just olives and oranges and meth, and it's sweet. And my in-laws, and they, my husband has lesbian moms, and they've been together for almost 40 years.
Really?
And, so they were lesbian moms before lesbian moms were cool, you guys. And they...
I always find those people so fascinating.
They are... They're the nicest women in the world, but when I met Andy's stepmom Fran, I was like, "So what do you do for a living, Fran?" And she goes, "I work a forklift at a cheese factory here in town." And I could not stop laughing, and I said, "Say it again, Fran." And she's like, "Why is that funny?" And I said, "It's a little stereotypical, Fran. You work a forklift at a cheese factory," and I know more lesbian. I know more lesbians than anybody I know. I don't know why, but But they are the sweetest people. But one time, you know, we visit them fairly often because it's just a couple hours away. And there's one Starbucks in this little town.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey, I'm going to take a walk to the coffee shop. And I get lost. I have no sense of direction. I get lost in New York in numbered grid streets. I get lost.
Yeah.
I have a magnet next to the compass in my brain. So I get lost, and all of a sudden I'm in just this apartment kind of area. It might be the projects. It might be whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It's Lindsay. There's, I'm not naked running with money taped to my ass. And, it's, and I'm not an attitude person, so nobody's going to give me any shit. Except for I got chased by a pack of tiny, wild, feral dogs.
Oh.
Little fucking chihuahuas and mutt chihuahuas who were biting at me. And these two women were sitting on their porch where I'm just like, I'm about to have words with tiny dogs. I'm about to kick a fucking dog, and it's and then there's going to be witnesses, and I'm going to feel like a jerk. Oh. And but I cannot be bit by dogs. I cannot. It is not something I wish to happen in my life.
That was Mona. Mona was one of those wild feral dogs.
Yeah, and so I say to the two women, I was like, "Can you call these dogs off?" And they laugh and they go, "They're not our dogs." And I was like, "Yeah, but you know these fucking dogs.
Yeah,
you can call these dogs off." And they're like, "Yeah, we can call those dogs off." And
I'll tell you, can I tell you, tell me what, okay, tell me if what I'm saying is, I don't know if it's, like, I don't know, maybe it's sexist, but, like, I believe that, let me start off with not saying I believe.
Okay.
Because my wife, this is one of my arguments I have with my wife.
Okay.
I think sometimes, not all the times, whatever, I don't even know how to talk these days. I used to be able to just say shit, and now I'm so cognizant of the fact that people's feelings are attached to these.
And they're listening.
And they're listening.
Well, look at you with empathy. Good for you. You're doing what you can.
I'm one of the more empathetic people these days, but that's through therapy, right, honestly.
Oh, good.
And my wife. But like, let me just put it this way. My wife has no etiquette with dogs, meaning like, if she's walking our dog and our dog wants to go over and sniff in your daughter's in carriage.
Crotchal area?
No, carriage. Like your daughter's in a baby in a stroller. My wife will let the dog go over. And I go, no, that's not how dogs work.
No, no.
And that's not how...
I'm so sorry. Dogs are dogs and people are people.
Yeah.
And you are a dog owner.
Yeah.
I am
so sorry.
Emancipation of dogs is not yet complete. Right. You have to control and curb your dog.
Thank you. But I feel like what I notice...
And I love dogs.
What I notice is that women are more apt to...
Just
be
let
like,
their dogs
yeah,
just
be like, around. Be like, no, he's okay, as opposed to men. But I think that's the... I think this is my theory. This is why I whittled it down. If I had those social... blinders on where I just let my dog walk over and smell you.
Yeah.
The dad then may get upset with me and there might be an altercation.
Right.
Like if my dog does something, there will then be an altercation, whereas women don't have that fear of an immediate altercation.
That's a good theory. This is my favorite thing about comics. You ask for any opinion. I don't have any information on this, but I will have an opinion, my friend. Oh, yeah. Let's do it. My opinion is that... This is sweeping, but I think that
this
men,
is all sweeping.
It's all very sweeping.
And I started
sweeping.
It.
Right. So my theory is that men are more conscious of how they are viewed as sort of not predators, but predators, right?
Yeah.
They're more, there's an aggressive testosterone thing that they are raised with where you're like, men just by their nature are considered more threatening. So when you are walking your dog, you are aware that the threat that you are as a man and that your dog might be as a dog.
Yeah.
When a woman is walking a dog, she might not be aware that she and her dog are a threat.
Okay, that sounds fair.
That is my theory without thinking it through. Anybody got anything? Iran?
No,
anybody?
Do you remember the hashtag yes all women?
Yes.
Women. By the way, I'm talking about my one friend a lot this podcast.
Yeah.
But we were talking about that. I never realized that, by the way, and I regret every man who fought that and said, well, yeah, but no, but all men. Well, that's not the fucking point of this.
It is not the point.
The point was just simply to open these shades so that you could see just how sometimes people feel. That's it. Not to say that yes, all men are aggressive animals.
What yes, all women does and Black Lives Matter, it is a water that fish live in that you do not live in. Right?
That is a very accurate way of putting it.
It is the pond that you do. You are also in that pond, but you are a different kind of fish.
Yeah.
So I, Jackie Cation, am not Helen of Troy, right? I do not inspire. I'm hot, you guys. I'm a wild cat in the sack. That's actually not true. I am hardworking and earnest in the sack. Makes up for a lot. So, but the thing is
you show up with a pail lunch.
I show up with a pail lunch. Yay.
I'll be here until 5.
So, but I. Even I have been sexually attacked, sexually. I've been date raped. I've had all the horrible things that have happened to me.
Yeah.
And I live a little defensively, but I don't live in fear. I wrote, when Yes All Women came out, I wrote a blog. I will repost it, you guys, because I am fascinating. But here's my revelation and the exact same thing, because you don't know the weird shit that I go through and the weird defensiveness that I live through. I have always been a liberal white lady. So I have always been sympathetic to the black experience.
Yeah.
Now, here, because of cell phones and because of the videos that come out every fucking week now, it is surprising to me that black people talk about anything else but their experience. But they don't, because that is the water in which they live in. You can't talk about the thing. I can't talk about sexism every fucking moment of the day.
Yeah.
Because I have a life to lead. I need to eat a sandwich. I gotta go.
See, I don't have to talk about any of that.
Right, because as a white guy, you don't have to deal with those things.
I don't deal with any of it.
Right, you have other issues. It doesn't mean that anyone's handing you 20s on the table.
No, I'm not saying. By the way, I'm not trying to glance over the difficulties it is that life is for everyone. But like, I deal with whatever stuff I deal with. You got to deal with also.
Right,
and then you got to deal with that other shit too.
Right, there's another layer, and it's the fact that, and I was talking to some comics the other day. I was Augie Smith and Andy Wood. You know those guys?
Yeah.
Whatever. But
yeah.
We're having lunch, and I was like, you know, it's weird that. Oh, I lost it. Shit. The train of thought. I have two brain
cells. Talking to Augie Smith and Andy Wood.
Yeah, I'm talking to those guys about how
it's weird about sexism and
community. How, you know, we are humans. And there is a black community, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, the black community is an artificial construct. It's a construct made for the protection of black people. But if you think about people as people, what if you're black and you're like, but that guy's I don't like him, but I have to be kind of supportive of him because he's another black guy. And you're like, that is a whole other level of having to hang out with people. That it's like comics.
Yeah.
Like, Some comics, I don't like them.
You've been very vocal about that.
Oh, I know.
I like it, though. I like people.
Because for the most part, I do like people.
Yeah.
And I make sure to tell comics if I like their new stuff and I like whatever comics.
Yeah.
But there's some comics that they just wear me out. And I just think of as work friends. And I can't.
Yeah.
But they do get to say whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
You know, and I will defend that right. And if there's a heckler situation, oh my God, I have said horrible things to hecklers.
Yeah.
Horrible things that I would apologize to if I ran into them again.
I've said mean things. I've said things and lost the entire crowd. And then I'm like, by the way, I regret saying it.
I totally like regret saying it.
Like people go,
but
just because I said it. Look, I was put in a situation where I tried to had to make fucking lemonade out of lemons.
Yes.
And I this is how I made the fucking lemonade. I'm sorry if I stirred it with my dick, but that's how I made the fucking lemonade.
Right. And nobody recorded it, and so I don't have to make a public.
Thank God.
Immolation of it, but the craziness is that I would apologize. Like if there was a guy 20 years ago who was horrible and would not shut up, and finally I made some crack. It was a terrible thing. I said a terrible thing to the man about his infant child, and you may imagine what horrible thing I said. And he was like, hey, that's gone too far. And I said, yes it is, will you please shut up? Because I did in the moment know that it was too far.
Yeah.
But please shut up. I'm working on. I'm trying to entertain the other 9 people that are in the room or whatever it is. Right.
It's interesting. I always find is that I think that that in those situations I always side with a comic and I go, listen. You don't know what it's like to be there.
100%. I said, actually, that's not true. Like sometimes if it's done. There are times when you're like, well, you didn't have to name the person. That's not, you know.
Yeah.
But when it's like, if it's Tosh at the comedy, you know, when you go to see a comedy show, American Public or anywhere in the world, please look up a YouTube video.
Make sure you know what you're going into, because it's not.
It may not be for you.
Comedy is not for everybody. I always say to everyone, I'll think of a joke in my head, and then I'll start giggling, and they'll go, "Say it, say it." And I go, "No, that's not for you. I promise you. I know what you like and what you don't like better than you do.
Right.
Trust me when I say you will not enjoy this. I like this. I can tell to Jackie. I can tell to Tosh. I cannot tell it to you."
Bamford opens her act with this whole thing about how her parents took her to see. They're like, "You like Spielberg? We're going to see War Horse," and she's like, War Horse, as far as I could tell at the end of it, was a documentary about how to kill a horse. And she said, "Now, what I would like to say to you is that I, Maria Bamford, might be your war horse. I am not for everybody. And if it is so, take a leaflet out of Martin Luther King, out of Gandhi, and march. Go to the bar."
But what's wrong with the people that become obstinate and arrogant that they don't like you? Almost as if like, and I'll use Maria as an example.
Yeah.
Almost as if Maria, they believe that Maria doesn't want them to like her.
Right.
Like,
"Oh my God, we all want you to like us.
Fuck. I want everyone to like me."
Everyone.
I used to have a joke. Now listen.
I want people I don't like to want to like. And there's people that I don't like only because they don't like me.
Yeah. Oh, that's every fucking situation I've ever had in a club. If there's one person not smiling, I'm like, "Please let that person fucking like me.
Unfold your arms, sir. I know you were
please
dragged here. And I know
arms.
You have a,
please unfold your
I know
arms.
You have a six-pack at home and your wife dragged you, and I'm so sorry."
And then I'll find myself focusing on the 68-year-old woman who I know is not jiving with my material.
Yeah.
And I'll go, "Man, this one's for you." Fucking what is wrong
is
with
it,
my...
Is, right.
In case you don't want to talk about this at all, but I don't feel like, but you don't have to. We're at 50 minutes. Just for all I remember. How do you go through something like sexual assault and then not have it define your voice?
Oh, right. Well, a couple of things. First of all, I was stand-up wise, I was raised up in stand-up in the generation where you were not even supposed to mention that you were a woman and had bodily functions.
Yes.
Because...
And you were in Wisconsin.
And it was all... It was Kinison. It was Sam Kinison and Steve Marmel and all of these sort of... These iconic comics who were dark and edgy and stuff like that. And guys could talk about their dicks and they could talk about the stuff that comes out of their dicks and the stuff that comes out of their asses. But as a woman comic, you were not allowed to talk about your menstrual cycle and you weren't allowed to talk about getting laid too much. You could say it in passing. And so I ended up writing a lot of jokes about sort of my inner life, like my brain. And so you weren't allowed to talk about sexual assault. In the last 15 years, a lot of women... There's more women doing comedy, and so much like when more people start doing it, you feel okay talking about like the real things in your life.
Yeah.
Like Cameron Esposito has a joke about her period that is hilarious and weirdly uncomfortable to me because I'm like, "Oh, is she allowed to talk about that?" Anyway, yeah. but yeah, she is, it turns out, because it's her 10 minutes. She can do whatever the fuck she wants with it. And if you don't like it, turns out there'll be another comic up.
Hey, I've heard some really good period jokes.
Right.
We're going, because George, my oldest, is 11, and the idea that your period will show up one day is a possibility. But it's interesting. I mean,
take her out to dinner, by the way. Make it a thing.
We sat down and we said, "You need a go bag, because if it shows up in school, try to go, baby. I don't know what that's like.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that when it did happen to the girl when we were boys,
and she didn't have a go bag,
and we were like, "Oh shit, fucking what's her name's got her period. Oh my
Def
god,
Con
like
5.
Yeah. Oh, she's dying." Like. And so I said, you know, boys are like, and so it was a really great talk. So I was like, I don't mind more conversations. I don't mind more stand up with different things other than just blowjobs, which I love talking about. But
a fisting joke that is done well with style and panache, please write that joke.
Yeah.
But the sexual assault thing, the weird thing is I did write a joke because I am in the first relationship of my life. I have always done stand up and always been alone and then just gotten laid because that's what I thought comics did.
You thought that's how it was, almost like the program. I was the same way, and I thought I'm gonna say the person's name because I love him, but like I just assumed that me and Gary Valentine would be 70 years old playing golf single until the day we died.
That's it. That's and you just you're single. And then most of the comics I met on the road, the first 10 years I was on the road, they cheated on their wives. Yeah. I remember the first guy I met who didn't cheat on his wife. I still remember his name. His name is Fred Klett, K-L-E-T-T. Yeah. I believe he does cruise ships now. And he is a wonderful comic, and he is a decent human being.
I never worked with anyone that didn't cheat on their wives. And for me, but falling lately, in love and not wanting to cheat, I was like, how does this work?
Right. How does it work? And so, but about 10 or 11 years ago, I was like, you know what I would like? A rest of a life. And so and online dating was invented, so it was an amazing thing. But so I am in this weird, I am in this relationship for the first time in my life, and not every, and so I do a bit about how not every sexual experience I have had has been a positive sexual experience. And so sometimes when you have a lot of sex with the same person, which I have never done before, me and my husband, we're constantly going at it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the time of my life, you guys. So, but sometimes he will poke me in a way that will remind me of a negative experience. And then I do a story about how then I'm crying and then he's screwing someone who's crying. And when you're having sex with someone who's crying, as a woman, you just have a couple of choices. You can lie there stoically, silent tears coursing down your face, and he may or may not notice, but he ruts like it's a Dickens novel. Or you can talk to him like a person. Yeah. Or you can do both, quite honestly, which is what I did.
Yeah.
I was like, no, let him finish. I love him.
And, let him finish.
Let him finish. And then we'll have the conversation. And so then we have the conversation. And it's the funny angle to it is the fact that my husband is a video game designer, a board game designer.
Is he really?
A card game designer. Everything is a game. Everything is a game mechanic. Everything can be fixed in life, including jury duty and urban planning, with game mechanics. So he is hilarious in that. So I tell him, I'm like, well, that was a sad thing. And we're going to need, I'm just going to need a minute to regroup. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, or we could fix it with game mechanics. We could LARP it out. And I'm like, what is happening? And so to LARP is to live action.
Oh, no, I've LARPed.
You've LARPed?
Of course.
What'd you LARP?
We did Zombie Apocalypse.
Oh, very funny.
It was one of the funnest things I've ever fucking done in my entire life.
Super
it didn't
fun.
Make for great TV, but it was one of the coolest things I've ever done. And I got lost in it, and I thought...
Because it's like playing Army when you're a kid.
And I thought... I go, it's so funny that... LARPing was the impetus of mockery.
Yes.
A LARPer. He's a
right.
LARPer.
But mock him. And yet, if you do it and you even if you don't commit, you have the I have done Starship Valkyrie is a sort of a Star Trek-y one that they run every month.
Really?
That you can just do. You sign right up. I think it's $25, you guys. And then they give you a character. You can make your own character. You can do whatever you want. And you go out into space and you fight bad guys.
It's so fucking
Andy
fun.
Andy ran a LARP at our house based on the TV show Deadwood. And
don't tell my wife about this.
Well, and two of his, I had to move. Two of his friends played Civil War veterans who had now had a bar in Deadwood, and they were in our backyard because it was 30 people, right?
Yeah.
And they're all. It takes all day. It's essentially, if you don't know what LARPing is, it's a costume party with game mechanics. So yes. There's beer and there's food,
it's actually pretty intricate, and it's very fun because you do get lost in character.
Yeah, and you can do Boffin LARPing, which is where you fight with swords.
Yep.
But my husband does theater LARPing, which is where there's a storytelling element.
Oh, that would be really fun.
Yeah, and so, but I had to move his two buddies from where we grill because they were in character saying horrible things. And I was like, guess where the saloon just got moved to? Into the garage, you guys. And so that's where
they're
that got
the
moved.
Character.
Yeah, so there's a whorehouse and there's a whore with a heart of gold. And then there's those two guys. And then there's the, I don't know if you remember in the TV show, there was a black veteran who referred to himself as the N general.
Yeah.
And so, but whatever it was. But it was super fun. And then he's done three different Sandman LARPs based on the Neil Gaiman series Sandman.
Yeah.
And that was the first one I ever went to. Maria and I did that one. And for that one, there were 70 people, and people wrote one-act plays of the death of each of the Endless. And it was the greatest thing. And Maria and I played extras.
Wait, what's the Sandman? I don't know what the Sandman is.
Sandman is a comic book, is a graphic novel written by Neil Gaiman. And And the Sandman is the dream guy, right? He's the sleep god. And the Endless are, there's seven of them. Nine? Seven. I think it's seven. And it is a great comic book. If you get a chance, read Sandman. Though purists will say you have to start at the beginning. I say you can start at the fourth graphic novel, you guys.
Really?
Because there's it's 75. That and Lucifer are some of the greatest stuff.
I have a hard time with comic books. I didn't know I was dyslexic.
Oh, okay. It's hard.
I have a hard time reading. I've always had a hard time reading. I don't enjoy
books
reading.
Books on tape.
Books on tape. But comic books are really tough for me because I especially, and I don't know if this is all dyslexics, but it's me and my daughter. My daughter's dyslexic too. My daughter's so dyslexic. She wrote a horrible word on her paper the other day.
Oof.
And the teacher grabbed her paper and ripped it up and said, "You're never to write that word ever again." And she didn't even know what word it was. To this day, my wife's trying to talk to the teacher to find out.
My daughter goes,
"Mom, you might want to tell this lady I'm dyslexic since the beginning of the school year." She goes, "Because I didn't mean to write anything."
Right, right. I was just trying to write, I don't know, come here.
But in comic books, I jump around. I'll just jump around. And the natural progression of where to read a bubble or whatever just doesn't work for me.
I have that same problem with manga, but that's only because I learned to read left to right like an English speaker. And manga is written right to left.
What's
like a
manga?
Hebrew. Manga? It's like anime, but comic booky.
Okay.
So it's Japanese comic books. Japanese comic books are right to left.
Oh, yeah.
And like Hebrew. Weird. Okay. And you have to read from the upper right-hand corner to the lower left-hand corner. And it is such a mind fuck for me. But it's just a learned skill. I am not dyslexic, so I could learn it. But it's sort of like learning how to play Halo on Xbox versus PlayStation. You have to spend a good 6 hours with the controller to relearn how to button mash correctly.
What's the weirdest analogy ever? No, I love when an analogy is specific and only the people that love it get it.
Right. So we LARPed out my sex problem. Which was, he was like, "So what we'll do is we'll put a couple of chairs in the kitchen and we'll pretend we're on the bus. And then the guy that attacked you on the bus, we'll go through it together and we'll reenact it." And I was like, "Gutsy stuff, brother." And he's like,
"Very gutsy stuff."
Right. But he's like, "But it'll be me and I'll look at you the whole time and we'll look at each other and we'll do it to each other and we'll laugh and we'll cry." And my favorite line, he's like, "And then at the end, you'll be fucking me and you'll love me." My favorite line. By the way, I just
kind of fell in love with your husband.
There's no reason not to fall in love with Andy Ashcraft. By the way, let me plug something. He just wrote a game that is free. So you could go to The Hero Instant, and The Hero Instant is an RPG. It's like D&D, but superheroes.
D&D but superheroes?
Yeah.
I could never get into D&D when I was a kid, but I wanted to so bad. I bought all the stuff.
It's fiddly. Did you read the books? You couldn't because you were dyslexic.
David Germain was into it, and we go over to his house, and I had all the stuff, but I love the fantasy. I love getting lost in fantasy, but I didn't really learn how to, this is going to sound really bad. I could always read, but I didn't really learn how to read until my freshman year of high school, meaning like I found a trick. Yeah. I took a speed reading class.
Okay.
So I was a really slow reader, and I had my reading comprehension was like zero.
Yeah.
And the speed reading class taught me, they were like, "You know what? Just let your eyes glance, jump around and grab a word and piece together whatever they're trying to say." And so now when I read, I'll just grab words and I get the gist of it, and I go, "Okay, vacation, Fiji, snorkel, mask, shark." Oh, then went scuba diving.
They went scuba diving. Yeah. They might have run into a shark.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So, that's kind of fascinating.
So, yeah, that's how I read now.
Okay, I think whatever you got to do, honestly.
Yeah, and it's not like, I can read departures and arrivals. I can read fine. It's just to sit and read a book for me is extremely taxing.
Right.
And it makes me more tired than it does. And books on tape are like,
it's a gift. Yeah.
Oh, I buy everything.
Are you on the Audible?
Yes.
I'm on my brother's Audible. It's pretty great. It's, you know how people are on their parents' Netflix and their friends' Netflix? I'm on my brother's Audible and my sister's Hulu Plus.
I'm on my dad's Amazon
Prime?
Books. Kindle.
On
my dad's Kindle, so I get all my dad's books. My dad's a big history buff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so every now and then I'll go into his thing and go, "Ooh, download a device, and then sit there and go, I'm not gonna fucking read this."
Well, I mean, that's the greatest thing. My brother will listen to any fantasy. His criteria, because he's a salesman and he drives all the time, is that it has to be over 26 hours. That's his criteria.
Really?
And I was like, "That isn't the best criteria, Phil. What I'm going to need from you is some quality." And he's like, why don't you pick something then? And I was like, "Well, I'm going to pick nonfiction." And then he's like, All right, well, don't use all my credits, but yeah, but he's, you know, he's my brother, so he's very sweet.
So wait, what, your family is, was it a big,
it was
a big,
six kids?
Six kids, you're the youngest?
I'm the youngest, yeah.
And what was the dynamic? Were you guys like, it's all boys, right?
Four boys and then my sister and then me.
And then were they like athletic? Were they beer drinkers?
No.
Were they?
Stoners mostly. Because, yeah, my brother Phil tells this great story about how when he was 17, he woke up under a bush in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with just a bottle of like Southern Comfort. And he just came to and he was like, I want to join the army and I want to go to Vietnam and Cambodia and get sort of a hookup with like a great hash dealer. And come back and be like a drug dealer of note here in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That was his dream when he was 17.
I love the when people's brains work so differently and they see their goals achieved in just the most fucking confusing, convoluted path.
It was like, did you want to make a and he gets it from our dad. My dad could have been the richest guy in town. He could have been Mr. Potter. And but go get him.
Go get her, Moans. Get out of here. Sweet, your dad.
Yeah, he could, but he can't. He needs it to be hard. So
what does
my
your dad
brother
do?
He's a salesman, and he was like a minor bag man for the mob in Milwaukee. So the Milwaukee mob. So it wasn't a Corleone Soprano kind of moment. It was more of a Frank Pulaski kind of moment. And, you know, the mob in Milwaukee is not. And my dad, he had a gambling problem. So he ended up being a bag man just because he's like, well, you want to work it off? And he's like, yeah, I do. I do want to work it off. And,
did you know that as a kid?
One time he had $1,000 in his pocket and he let me hold it and count it.
Really?
And greatest dad in the world sometimes, my pop. And other times, not great. So my brothers are torn to this whole, but my brother Russ, he has said it before. He said, you know what I do with dad? Because he hangs out with our dad a lot. He's like, what I do is dad tells me how he would do something. And then he tells me, and then he goes and does it differently because it's too easy that way. And I do it the way he told me to do. And then I make $100,000. And then dad has $7,000. And I was like, oh my God. He's like, well, why don't you tell the rest of us that? And he said, yeah, whatever. You sit around with him. And so.
When was the moment? I was just thinking about this morning. When was the moment when you realized your parents were human?
Pretty early. I mean, it was, you know, like my mom died when I was 7 and we never mentioned her again. And the theory is that if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And she died. It was her and her boyfriend flipped off.
Your parents were split up.
They were separated. And I recorded the Dork Forest with my dad, by the way, that I have never aired because I was so mad at him he had just because. Because his dorkdom, my dad's dorkdom is sales.
Yeah.
But when you say that, everything, much like my husband's, everything is a game to him, everything is a sale to my dad.
Everything's a sale, yeah.
Including women, including going to the 7-Eleven and buying a soda. Absolutely everything.
He can't turn it off. Everything's a joke to me.
Everything is a joke to me, and he cannot turn it off. So we are at Leon's getting frozen custard in Milwaukee. They are $1.50 each.
Yeah.
My father's like, well, what do you want for this? And the kid working the window is like, they're $1.50 each. And he said, well, you don't have like a senior discount or, you know, I got $5 right here for the three of us. Is that something? And
is that something?
No, it isn't something, Dad. Find another dollar.
I'm going to use that. I swear to God, I'm going to steal that and use that in life when I'm at a bar. I got $5 for the three of us. Is that something?
Is that something?
Is that something? Is that something? Such a great line. Is that something?
My father is chock full of great lines.
Is that something?
He has made a great line.
That's so fucking brilliant. Is that something? Oh, is that something? Oh, that's so fucking great.
Yeah. Well, so on the pod, he's telling me about how he met my stepmother, and him and my mother are separated, and he's like, so I met Nancy. I'm at the bar, and it's 19 whatever, and I'm like, and so there's this pause, and I go, Dad, I don't like the math, and I'm genuinely angry, and I go, I don't like the math on that, Dad. I don't like the math on you with Nancy. And he goes, well, that's the math. You know, I didn't, it's not my fault. Yes, it is. It's specifically, you're the two people involved in that fucking story.
Yeah.
You're the one who's all still with my mother hitting on Nancy Kashian. And so.
Shut up. So the math was.
The math was he was still with my mother hitting. And then he goes, well, that's not my fault. That's the math. You should have seen me in the 60s with Yvonne. And I was like, Dad, I don't want to see you in the 60s with Yvonne. You are familiar with the fact that I am your daughter.
So your mom had six kids.
Yes.
And then,
and then she died. And then she is, and the I met her at the end, right?
What's like, fascinating about you, Jackie, yeah. is that there is still so much of you. You are the most open, like sweetest, liberal, like. But there's still a part of you that is old school. Like there's still a hint of old school in you. It's like a cocktail, and you're like, is that a lemon rind? And you're like, you could taste it, and you're like, yeah, you never miss it. Yeah. But like, there's so, because like, there's part of you that's so open, so honest, so like available. And then there's also a part of you that's like 1970s Milwaukee.
Oh yeah,
like not Milwaukee, but 1970s Wisconsin. Like,
yeah, very much.
It makes such a beautiful person because you are this person that. Things like, you know, the hashtag yes all women really fucking matter to you.
Yeah.
And but then there's still a part of you that's like, and so my mom died, so like, and you're like, barrel through, come, grin and bear it, black coffee,
walk it off. Well, and that's the, I mean, I tried for about a year and a half to do this thing about grief, because my stepmother passed away 3 years ago, and it was very sad, and also very funny, because this disaster, okay, so she dies July 25th. 3 years ago. So I don't know. You'll remember it when I tell the story. So she dies. I go, and it was unexpected. I had lunch with her 2 weeks earlier. Luckily, my husband and I went back and had lunch. And then she was sick. She was, you know, she was always had sort of hard health, but it was unexpected that she passed away. And so it was very sad. And then, so I go home for the funeral. I come back to LA. I walk into Bar Lubitz. There's a bunch of comics and like alti comics. And one of them I know pretty well. And he's like, how's it going? And I was like, oh, my mom. And my stepmom raised me from when I was 8 till now. Yeah. So she is my mother. I will put her crazy against anybody's biological mother because I hated her and loved her as much as you love your own mother.
Yeah.
So, because she was my mom. And so I was like, oh, my mom died. And I was just at the funeral. And he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. One of the other comics, a very young, very, very funny young man, said, oh, was she at that Batman movie in Aurora? 4 days after both events. So inappropriate from absolutely every goddamn angle. And I couldn't stop laughing. And I was like,
Batman?
Hey, Captain Asperger's. No. She was not at the Batman movie in Aurora, Colorado, where she was gunned down, you weirdo.
I want to know who it was.
Hampton Yount.
And, really?
It's so funny. And the thing is it was so inappropriate. I laughed because Nancy Kashian would have laughed.
Yeah.
Because she loved stand-up comedy. She was, I get my timing and I get a lot of things from my dad, but I get my sense of humor from Nancy Kashian, who was smart and dark and hilarious.
That's the thing I'm proudest about, or the thing I cherish the most, is the fact that I'm in a subculture of people who are allowed to say that to each other because they know that our peers are the funniest people in the world,
right?
And we get privileged enough to hear.
Like, I half burst into tears and half laughed in his face.
Yeah.
And I literally said, Captain Asperger's, that isn't great.
So you lost your mom at 7. What memories do you have of your mom?
Well, my mom was 16 when she got pregnant with my oldest brother. And she was 26 when she had me. So she had six children under the age of 10. And my father is a salesman on purpose so that he does not have to be there. So what he did was he brought home a lot of money, and he gave it all to her. And then he was like, and I'm out. Raise these kids. I got to go. And so
six kids. And that is so many children.
That is so many children.
26 years old. She's still a young woman. Yes. That's the thing that's lost.
By the way, lost all of her teeth by the time she was 30. How? You say.
How?
Because she drank like a fish. She was the biggest alcoholic in the... I genuinely picture her right now in heaven with a cigarette and a beer going, oh, good, you didn't need me. It worked out. Oh, that's great. I picture her totally in heaven. A heaven where there are no six children under the age of 10. Really? And I loved her, but she was a disaster. Really? And I don't blame her for being a disaster because how... My oldest brothers are like... No, she was great. She cooked and cleaned and she tried to do, you know, she genuinely tried to do that June Cleaver or Leave It to Beaver thing, probably for the first three kids. And then exhaustion. And she just want, and when my dad left in like 69 and I was four and he moved out of town and he didn't give her any child support because she just blew it on booze. So he gave it to my grandmother, his mother, and all of my older siblings would go and eat over at her house. But there was no food in our house. Like my, I remember my second oldest brother, he would feed me. My oldest brother was 14 and 15 and getting laid and was the hottest guy in the world. My second oldest brother is an old woman and I love him dearly and he will cry at the drop of a hat. He is very emo, but he is also enormously, he's one of the nicest, most sincere dudes in the world. And when he was 10 and 11, he would cook for me. Really? And we were like the Lord of the Flies, right? I mean, there was a lot of infighting.
I can't imagine. Six kids, dad's gone, mom's drinking, in Wisconsin, in the
raising
in
themselves
in like the
tiny what, factory town, just the dumbest.
It's, I mean, like there's you know, part of it, I can't help but think it this way, and I don't know if it's, but it's part of it's very romantic.
Well, we've all we've kind of romanticized it to some extent where you're just like, I was 5 years old hitchhiking.
You're the Curtis family.
Yeah.
Pony Boy Curtis. Soda Pop Curtis.
Well,
and
yeah,
Barry
yeah.
Curtis.
Yeah. Well, and Phil and Terry did their Soda Pop and Pony Boy best. I mean, yeah. Terry would play pool and bring money home to pay for rent. We lived in a two and a half bedroom apartment, the six of us, with my mom. So my two brothers were in one room. My mom was in one room. My brother Phil was in the pantry that had been turned into a bedroom. Darla and I shared a bed, and I wet the bed until I was eight. And she still, to this day, sleeps on the edge of the... Nancy Kashian cured me of the wetting of the bed. She was like, every day you don't wet the bed, you get a star. You make it 30 days, I get you a toy. And it worked. Like it took 1 month. Nancy Kate, I mean, Phil tells the story. He said, you know, mom died, and the next day dad was back, and there was food in the kitchen. And he said, we were sad about mom, but there was food in the kitchen. So essentially, we dried our tears with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So it was, I mean.
And how did your mom die? She drove off a cliff?
Her and her boyfriend were on a motorcycle, and they were drunk, and they'd flipped off an overpass and got run over by cars. The worst.
Fucker.
He lived. Harold lived. And I used to do a joke that nobody thought was funny except for three people, which was it was a Harley Davidson, so we were proud. Because it's Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Could you imagine the neighbors if it had been a Kawasaki? Anyway.
Tell me more about this boyfriend.
Poor Harold. I mean, Harold, I think, was just devastated. But he just, I mean, because he lived.
Him?
We met him when he was a kid. Phil used to talk about he was a good guy. Like, he wanted mom to marry Harold because Harold had a job at PE. He had, a factory job, and he was a good guy. Because, you know, Harleys are expensive.
Yeah.
But my mom, she genuinely was drunk all the time, and there was nothing. By the time I met her, she was just a disaster of a human being. And I feel bad for her.
Do you think she drank during your pregnancy?
Oh, totally. My grandmother would tell me. My grandmother hated her. She thought that that my mom had ruined my father's life. All by herself. It was weird.
God.
She was the only one who talked about her.
You know, those people don't exist anymore who will talk like that. Like, my grandmother passed. My grandmother was not happy that I was getting married to my wife and was vocal about it.
Oh,
Those people don't exist. I mean, I don't know if they exist anymore, but she was like, well, no, she's a Lowland Scot. She's from...
Oh, your
my grandmother was about my wife.
Okay.
Is that Camp? We're from Georgia, from a small town in Georgia, at the foothills of Appalachia. It's just a Lowland Scot. We can't marry those.
Wow.
And I was like, my dad, no one told me. Because I loved my grandmother to death. And then my dad finally said, what my mom said, my mom brought it up, is that my wife was very adamant about keeping my grandmother in the loop of my daughter. So she'd call her not maybe once a week, but maybe more than that, maybe twice a week, call her and let her talk to the girls. And she really included her in my daughter's lives and up until when she passed. And so my grandmother loved my
ended
wife.
Ended up loving your
and
wife.
And my mom was like, that's fucking bull. I've liked Leanne since day one.
Oh.
Like, she just started liking her.
She just started. She was my friend first.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's funny is that my sister is gay and has always been gay and is very gay and doesn't care. And my whole family is very much like that, where we're just like, yeah, this is what I do. If you don't like it, you should probably not like me. I gotta go. But my sister,
I got one speed. That's so fascinating because I say that to people. I go,
one speed because that's awesome.
No, I go like, what was I saying? I just said it today. Someone had a fucking note to me. They wanted to like say something that I had said that had hurt their feelings. And I've said very candidly, hey, listen, unless you fuck me or pay me, I don't really care what you have to say.
Yeah.
Like you gotta be one of those two people. You either pay me or fuck me and I'll listen to you.
I'll listen to you. I'll try to change.
But other than that, you're not in my swing zone. You're out of my radius, honey. I'm sorry, whatever I said.
Right.
I drink a lot sometimes. I say some things that are inappropriate. But just ignore me, you know? Yeah. Like,
so, but it's so funny because my mother, my stepmother, was like, Darla, you can't tell grandma that you're gay. It'll kill her. And our grandmother is Armenian. And Darla was like, so she lived through the Armenian genocide. But me being gay, wanting to date women, she was marched through Lebanon and Syria for months. And
homosexuality is going to kill her.
Yeah, that's just going to kill her.
Thank God she didn't see a gay walking through Lebanon and Syria.
Right. She saw some guy who really liked camels, but no, woman on woman love, that's going to devastate her.
I was thinking about this today. I was like, it's neat to know that thinking of like one of our, like a friend of ours, if his son was gay, and he came about it honestly, he'd grow up in a place where he could honestly probably say to his dad, I think I like boys better than girls. And any of my friends would all be like, that's totally fine. And like,
that's so okay.
Yeah. And I was like, that's really neat that exists now.
It is good that people can hear it and not be super, because I remember when Darla came out, and I remember when my friend Mary Skinner came out. If you ever met Mary Skinner, you'd be like, oh, you did not know that Mary Skinner was gay? Because I have the worst gaydar. I thought I was gay for a little while. That's how bad my gaydar was.
My wife thought she was gay.
Right. And then I made out with a couple of women, and I was like, no, this is not what I'm looking for. And
my wife's mom thought she was gay.
Oh, Nancy thought I was gay, too. But I was like, no. And my husband, it was very funny, because he was like, you're the worst. You're the most into cock woman to be gay. And I was like, did you just say cock? That's a lot.
You're a pretty big size queen for a gay.
Size queen. Yeah, my husband's family, his entire family is from Mississippi. Like both sides of his family. But
really?
He was raised in like some weird little Oroville, California. He was raised in a little gold town outside
everyone
of the
thinks,
Bay Area.
Everyone thinks Mississippi's so different and so like such a different place. But you go there, you know, it's just very similar to North Florida, Alabama,
it's,
Georgia.
It's not even, you can't even, they get cable, you guys. Yep. It's all working out. It is, the public school system is terrible. But I will say this, because I'm doing this thing about how I love guns, but I don't know anything about them.
I love guns and I know nothing.
Right, which should terrify. And every time I say, I was like, they make a big noise and a rip in the paper. And my in-laws, they're just steam comes out of there. And they're, because the public school system may suck in Mississippi, but gun safety, everyone knows that's they got common sense down as far as guns and stuff. If they shoot you, they meant to. In Wisconsin, people are constantly accidentally shooting each other.
If they shoot you, they meant to. And I'm going to say Mississippi, and I don't know if just in the South, if they shoot you, they're going to kill you also. Like, that is the other thing. My wife has a gun, and she says she has.
Andy has no interest. His dad was lived in Arkansas until he passed away about 3 years ago as well. But he had all these guns, and his wife, his current wife, his widow, was like, Andy, do you want any of these guns? And Andy's like, well, I don't need them. I'm good. And
I'd been like, yes, fucking all of them.
Well, because the thing is he gave me a bow, and Andy gave me, I'm doing this bit now, and this is how I talk. I talk about comedy. He gave me what I call a Hunger Games kit for Christmas. The greatest gift in the world. I got moccasins, which I've never had, but I've always wanted.
Yeah.
I got a bow and arrow, a real bow and arrow with a quiver that was a prop from Xena.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was awesome.
So it's a real quiver.
It's a real quiver.
If it's a prop from Xena, it's a real quiver.
It's a leather quiver, and it's got arrows in it, and it's a real bow. And then my mother-in-law gave me a knife. So I got a Hunger Games kit, and I put it all on right when I got it, and I was heading out the door, bow in hand. And Andy says to me, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Errands." And he was like, "No. Please, no." And it was a reveal of why people want to openly carry the damn guns, and it's because it's cool. It's super cool.
Fun as fuck.
And Andy goes, "Only cool to you, making everyone else uncomfortable." And it's a huge reveal. Hey, gun owners, you're safe at the Denny's. We don't need our weapons at the Denny's. And I have three friends who collect swords who totally want to wear their swords out, but even gun people would make fun of them.
Oh, I did. Two of my buddies are gun carrying guys.
Yeah. Concealing carry? Think about a Derringer on your forearm. Oh, I don't have a gun. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. Bang!
Fucking, I would love to be.
I get it.
I totally get it. My buddy Cowhead, comes into Ybor. You've done Cowhead, I'm sure. In Tampa.
I've done the improv with Maria, and it's like a three-story improv.
Yeah,
Be this theater, and you're like, that's half full. That's unfortunate for all of us.
It's a big fucking room.
Yeah, it's a big fucking room.
But Cowhead does a radio show down there, and he has his fucking weapon on him. And whenever we go to hang out, he always wants to go to this Shooter's World, I think it's called. And they
A range?
Yeah, I'm obsessed. I love talking about obsession, and I'm obsessed with knives. I don't have any of my knives. Oh, yeah, I have a bunch of knives right here.
A bag full of knives.
I have a bag full of knives.
Bag full of cool knives, you guys.
These are, I'm obsessed with knives. So I have, knives everywhere.
Let me see the bag. Let me just, I'll browse while you talk about your knife collection.
No, but, awesome those are just some. Those are traveling knives. Those are more functioning. Those are nail clippers.
That's a nail clipper, and here's a scissors. You just like pointy things, man. This is a nice Swiss Army knife.
Yeah,
I have
it's got
nice
my
Swiss
name on it.
Knife.
You can tell.
Oh my God, Thundercock! That's hilarious. You don't have it? Does it? I've gotten so many of these confiscated by TSA.
I had a beautiful one. One of my favorite knife companies is Spyderco.
Yeah,
and it's a great knife company.
It's a nice Swiss Army knife.
Great Swiss Army knives are underrated. I bought them for me, my wife, and my daughters, and got our names engraved in them.
Neat.
And when I was in Switzerland, but Spyderco makes a great knife. That's just a Leatherman. For me, it's like sitting in the hotel room on a Sunday,
playing Mumbling
Peg, and just like cleaning my toenails. I want a knife for that.
Oh, do you?
But like these Spydercos. And so I was in Africa. And I had a really great
were you
knife.
You in Africa?
Yeah.
Where did you go to that South African comedy festival?
No,
or something?
I did. I was doing Travel Channel.
Oh, Travel Channel?
I've done the South African comedy festival. It's really fun.
I really want to do that South African channel.
You'd love it.
I would love it.
You would
they
love it.
They should totally have me. I went to Djibouti once to, Djibouti, insert your own joke. But I went to perform for the troops in Northern Africa, which is still super cool. I was like, I've been to Africa, but I would love to go to anywhere in Africa because of
Tanzania,
how big Africa is.
Tanzania, Zanzibar, South Africa, Durban, Joburg.
It's just nice to meet people with t-shirts on of the team that didn't win from the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see that guy?
National champions.
National the Packers
the
won
Packers.
Again?
Wait, I didn't know they won that year.
And they didn't. So sad. I genuinely love traveling to weirdo places because places that you don't get to travel to, that like Andy got offered to judge a video game contest in Iran. And he had to turn it down because he had other work. But he was like, well, should I even go? And I was like, when was the next time you were thinking about getting a free trip to Iran?
Yeah.
Iran? Iran. No.
I say
Iran.
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 Like it's 1980.
Right. Yeah. Like the Shah's still in charge.
All I remember is that song, Bomb, 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 Iran.
Oh,
bomb,
yeah?
Bomb, Bomb,
That's
bomb,
just comedy
bomb,
gold,
Iran.
You guys.
Yep.
Keep writing.
Q105. Sky Shannon and Cleveland Wheeler.
And the Weasel. Anyway, whatever the zoo animal
that was. I'm going to go through my subtle obsessions, okay?
Do it. Because you got to come on the Dork Forest.
I would love to. Knives, gloves.
Gloves?
Gloves. I love gloves.
Oh, weird.
Like good gloves.
You have very soft hands?
No, but I don't. But like these are actually, randomly enough, these are a pair of my favorite gloves. They're Trico Motostuckas. And they're just motorcycle gloves.
Okay.
But I do a lot of outdoor stuff.
Okay.
For Travel Channel. So you always need gloves. So I have a good set of belay gloves. I've got a pair of fingerless belay gloves. I've got motorcycle gloves. I've got horseback riding gloves. I've got scuba diving gloves. I've got outdoor. I've got ski gloves. I've got so many gloves.
Yeah, yeah.
That like, and my wife goes crazy. Knives. Like I get knives wherever I go to mm-hmm. remind me of the trip.
Yeah. Do you play Mumbly Peg?
What's that?
Mumbly Peg. Oh, it's the game where you throw the knife on the ground and you it's sort of like horse but with knives.
No.
Oh my God! Google Mumbly Peg.
Mumbly Peg, it is. Where did I put my phone?
Someone will email you.
Yeah, someone email me about Mumbly Peg.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. I'm obsessed with podcasting.
Oh yeah.
I'm obsessed, not making them.
Right.
As anyone listening to this can tell.
Right, right. You're on board.
I've been very slack lately because just I've been on the road and I'm not comfortable doing solo podcasts. Oh, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to release one with a guest every week on Tuesday and then one with a solo one with me just talking on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
And just to kind of help build a burst.
Do you do the editing yourself and everything?
I do it all myself. That's why when I'm working, yeah. I get very backlogged because I'm working for travel doing this show, Birth Conquer.
I got a guy.
Oh no! I'm like I said, I asked you that question.
Bit of a control freak,
and I go very big control freak, mm-hmm. and I go, hey, if you don't want me to put this in, I'll take it out.
Yeah.
So I look at it. No one's ever going to fucking do that. And then one day I put something in that you're not comfortable sharing, and you get mad at me, not the editor. And so I'm very.
Well, here's what I do, because I've been doing it the 9 years this month, and then I take notes with time code, and because I do
You're doing it.
While I'm doing it, because I do a log, I do a clip that I put out the day before. Like this week's episode is with Paul Gilmartin about woodworking. I
love Paul Gilmartin.
And he's a woodworking dork.
Yeah.
And so I asked him if he does any whittling. And he does not. He does not do any whittling. He said that. He's like, you know, people who whittle, it's always a shitty horse. And I said, except for the one guy who could totally whittle a totally cool horse. And he's like, I have never met that guy.
Almost got into whittling.
I almost
got into whittling because it needed knives.
It's a knife related thing from
whittling. I was in Colorado, and there was a indoor skydiving place that we were going
sure.
to. And right next door was a big art shop, and I walked in because I love art. And I'm walking around, and all of a sudden I'm like, I love making art.
Craft.
I like messing around.
Right, right.
And so I saw a whittling kit, and I went, I'm getting a fucking whittling kit.
I bought a watercolor kit and have never touched it. I opened it. Sadly, have not gotten with it.
But. We do. What we'll do is, me and my daughters will get oil canvas and oil paints, and we'll take one Georgia O'Keeffe painting, and we'll all do our version of that.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah, we've done it twice. It's not like we do it all the time, but
right. But you've done it a couple. It's done.
Yeah, and
it's
so,
a thing.
But then both my daughters are very artistic. I bought them both. I went to an art shop and I bought them art journals and great pen sets. And
oh, nice.
I said, you know, draw pictures of things you do. So it's bought one for my daughter in Vail, and she started drawing her days.
Oh, nice.
And my other one just draws, and she'll do representations of what she remembers going on that morning.
Okay.
Like today, it was a picture of Isla. Georgia drew it. It was a picture of Isla refusing to eat her breakfast. And then Georgia commenting on it. Like almost like a comic book, a little bit.
Yeah, that is a cartoon.
She likes
That's
comic
exactly
books.
What that
it's one of the reasons I like doing the meltdown
because you get the $40.
I go over and I just buy comic books for Georgia.
Excellent. How old is she?
11.
11. She might enjoy a comic book called Runaways.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was Joss Whedon who opened, or it might have been Brian K. Vaughan, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Runaways. It's essentially the log line of it is every kid thinks that their parents are supervillains. These kids are. Their parents are supervillains.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, it is. Oh. And 11's perfect.
Oh, I'll get it.
Yeah.
God, you're fucking amazing.
Yeah, what the heck, man? It turns out I don't have... I just spend a lot of time reading. Anyway, so... My dad paints, by the way. And,
really?
Yeah, and he sent me a couple of his paintings. And they're good. He actually does. It's very realism. He does acrylics.
Runaways. I'm gonna forget about it. I guess I can listen to this. The fuck am I writing it down for?
Right. Well, yeah. Because what I do is So I release like a 4 minute clip with a slug, like a picture of the person who's on the pod, and a tiny little picture of whatever they're dorking out about, and then the sort of the logo of the show, the Dork Forest.
If you could say top five episodes you've done that people would go right now download and then fall in love with your podcast because of?
Greg Proops, the history of baseball, personality baseball one is amazing. All Greg Proops episodes are amazing. Patton Oswalt's wife, Michelle McNamara,
yeah.
does this thing called True Crime Diary, and she loves serial killers. It was one of the first, she's done three or four episodes, and they're amazing. there's great episodes like the one about surfing that I just did with Murray Valeriano and Monty Franklin was great. Yeah. And
I'm having Murray on this week, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then, but there's like Aisha Tyler talking about video games was amazing. The Maria Bamford episodes are all great. Diva Zappa, Frank Zappa's youngest daughter, did knitting. That was fucking-tastic. Because when you think of a Zappa knitting, because I was like, so knitting dorks are super, like, anal, right? Like, if you drop a stitch, you got to undo. Because I don't knit.
Yeah,
I was like, but
either.
You got to undo and redo. But not Diva Zappa. Diva Zappa's like, I always think if I drop a stitch that bump was meant to be there. And I was like, yes, awesome, Diva
Zappa.
That's
how I want to fucking knit.
That's how I want to knit.
That's how my stand-up is.
And then Janine Garofalo talking about beating, totally OCD. It's like, no, I undo and redo and undo and redo. So, I mean, so I'm like,
who does she beat?
Beating. She makes
beating. I was like, what? Janine Garofalo beats, by the way, can I tell you something?
Rage?
I've always had the biggest crush on Janine Garofalo.
Everyone's at, you know what? I one time I remember just being hammered, hanging out with a buddy of mine named Spencer Dobson, and him almost
Spencer
just.
Spencer Dobson?
Yeah, stand-up comic from Minneapolis.
Yes, blonde hair, tall.
Yeah,
Spencer Dobson. He was friends with KP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very funny guy.
I know Spencer fucking Dobson.
You know Spencer Dobson.
I haven't talked to him in forever, but Spencer Dobson worked on my show, the X Show.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's it. And so, but he. We're just both of us just hammered, and Cat Dog or whatever with cats. I don't know. Some movie came out.
Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Yeah, where Gwyneth Paltrow plays the pretty one, and he's like half of the bag, and he goes, Janine Garofalo is nobody's ugly duckling. Not it. Not happening. And I was like, I agree. I don't know what to say to that. It's sort of like Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Is like somebody said, Amy Schumer has got to stop talking about how she's not good looking because she's the hottest thing in the world, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, calm down. I get it. You think she's pretty. And so, yeah. But, yeah, there's episodes of... if you go, actually, there's... Every year I have fan favorites. People vote on their favorite episodes. Joseph Scrimshaw did a defense of the Star Wars prequels that nobody should not listen to because... First of all, how can you defend the Star Wars prequels? And Joseph Scrimshaw does a beautiful job of it. And so
that's fucking. By the way, I thought he would totally talk about carving handles of knives.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I did Scrimshaw one time.
Oh, did you do Scrimshaw?
Yeah.
His name is Scrimshaw, and there's one of the great things about the Dork Forest is that there's sort of famousy people on it, like Jim Gaffigan talking about news personalities.
Yeah.
And then. I don't know. Greg Fitzsimmons talked about Rage. And
he's an interesting guy when he talks about that stuff. Yeah,
Sully McCullough has over 100 pairs of tennis shoes. Sneaker dork.
Oh, that's very popular,
though.
That
is a thing.
That is, there are people that grown men who are obsessed with sneakers.
Sully McCullough is obsessed with, his Instagram is entirely just pictures of his sneakers.
My little cousin, David, is obsessed with sneakers.
Yeah.
And he just Googles them nonstop.
Constantly looking at sneakers.
I was obsessed. I went through a massive obsession with Bull Mastiffs before we got Priscilla. All I do is Google Bull Mastiffs. I could tell you more about Bull Mastiffs than you'd ever need to know.
She's a very sweet dog, that Bull Mastiff.
She's very sweet. She's been a little bit of a headache in that she's had a lot of surgeries because she's purebred, and so there's overbreeding.
Yeah.
And if you're ever thinking about buying a purebred dog, don't. And if you do, get pet insurance. That's my
pet
two cents.
Insurance. It's I do a lot of jokes about pets, but pet insurance joke that nobody wants to hear is that if you have a baby, you should also buy a dog.
Yeah.
That same year and get life insurance on that dog, and then 16 years later leave the gate open, and then you could pay for your daughter's college. And then everyone looked at me like I was the asshole, and they were, of course, correct, because that is such a dicky. Because I've always love dogs. We have an iguana.
Oh,
we can't.
I had an iguana obsession.
Did you?
A reptile obsession aggressively in college. Aggressively, like I had a Savannah monitor, I had a Nile monitor, I had an iguana. We had a ball python.
The only reason we have an iguana is because the entire Ashcraft Foley family, all of Andy's relatives, they never, ever buy animals. They never get animals. They always, someone hands them a fucking animal.
Oh.
And like literally his dad had a horse and these beagles that would hunt deer. And he was he trained bird dogs. So he didn't train beagles. He trained bird dogs. And so he had bird dogs like whatever. But his mom's have all of these dogs and cats. And so Andy has an iguana because a guy came to PlayStation when he was working at PlayStation and had just bought 3 iguanas. Iguanas grow to be almost 4 feet.
They're fucking massive.
Yeah.
I never got the real fun out of mine. It never got big. His name was Wilbury.
Did he die?
And I think, he did die.
Yeah.
It's a very hilarious story.
Well, which is awesome. It's hard to keep them alive.
I'm going to find that clip. If I have it, I'm going to find that clip and post it of me talking about the time I tried to cremate my iguana.
Aw.
Because he died, and I thought it would be more tasteful to cremate him, and it just turned into a fucking nightmare.
Did you try to cremate him yourself?
I'm not even going to try to tell it because I'll start laughing hysterically. Oh, but like, but yeah, iguanas, monitors, and snakes. And there was when we ride back to Tallahassee, there used to be this big reptile farm. And on our way, you had to take a little bit of a detour, and I'd got stopped there every time. And I'd spend at least an hour just looking at reptiles and usually picking one up. But what are you looking for? Your iguana?
Yeah, the iguana.
Can I tell you what I really want to do? I want to have like an animal kingdom back here. What I'd like to do is live...
Did you ever do Wilmington?
What's that?
The Dead Crow... the Dead Crow Comedy Club in Wilmington, North Carolina.
That's a great iguana.
It's
a great iguana.
Yeah, Tiberius Gracchus. He's named after a Roman general named Tiberius Gracchus.
What a great name, Tiberius Gracchus.
Yes,
yeah.
And Andy got him, and he was little, and then, but now he's 21 years old, and they live to be about 30. Though 5 years ago, Andy said they lived to be about 25. So as we go along,
just keep going and going and going.
I don't know if you know this, iguanas live to be about 40. Yeah, but I can't get a dog because I'm on the road too much. Like you, yeah. I'm on the road like 40 weeks a year.
I bought a dog and my wife just takes care of it.
Well, Andy was like, I have always had a dog. I don't want a dog right now. It's too much work.
It's a lot of work. And it's a lot more work than an iguana.
Yeah, the iguana, you can actually leave an iguana because they need to be fed every
day. I'm obsessed with pets. I'm being dead serious when I say this. If I could run like a little bit of like a kingdom back here, I would like a big, nice macaw. Like clipped wings,
bird.
Like a bird that. But I wish I had like what I'd really like is like an owl, like an owl who
How
lives
about
back
a,
here.
An owl bear. That's a D&D reference. Gurhoo. Anyway, so you would like an owl?
I would like an owl. I'd like a Savannah cat, like one of the first generations. There are cats that are like 40 pounds. They get to be like this big,
like bobcat.
It's almost like a bobcat, but it's more like a.
Are they domesticated?
They're domesticated, kind of. They're illegal in some places.
Okay.
I'd like another bull mastiff. I'd like an iguana, and then that would kind of round out my backyard.
Wow.
And obviously
a
tortoise.
Oh, and a tortoise.
A tortoise.
Not a dolphin.
I almost bought a tortoise. I almost bought my daughter a fucking fennec fox for her birthday because I was like, it's like the moment where you realize like, man, I'm a grown up. No one gets to tell me what to do.
You could do whatever you want.
And I'm not rich, but I got some money. Like I could buy a fucking fennec fox.
You have a disposable income. I had a Lego dork on the other day. It was Tommy Ryman. Great comic. I don't know if you know Tommy, he said, you know, I was at the store and there was like, I think it was like a $300 Lego kit to make a Millennium Falcon or something. And he was like, I actually could afford that.
Yeah.
And he's like, not every week, but like once a year I could buy a $300. And so he bought a ginormous like Millennium. And I was like, was it life size? Could you sit in it? And
it's that Brandon Walsh has a joke. Like, you know, you can buy a birthday cake for yourself any day you want.
Any day.
Like that feeling of going like, I can fucking do this. And then I took it to my daughter, Georgia, because Isla, my youngest, is obsessed with fennec foxes. I went to Georgia and I go, George, hey, let's get Isla a fennec fox for her birthday. And George is like, are you out of your mind? She's like, you're going to bring a wild animal into this house?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Jackie, I really appreciate you doing this.
Thanks so much. This has been so long. It went by so fast. Thank you so much.
It was an hour 45, so it was fantastic. I could literally.
I think we could. Let's keep talking. But nobody has to sit through it.
Yeah. Please let me do Dork Force. I'd love to. I'll find my specific obsession that I could talk ad nauseum about.
Right.
And then we'll.
I think you're going to be a little bit of plug and play, my friend.
Yeah.
We will start talking, and then the hour because I only do an hour.
I usually do. I try to keep it at like below 2 hours, but yeah. I've gone five.
Yeah, that's, I get tired. I get, it's not that I don't love people. I just had a wrestling dork on and I was like, Ed, we're done. And that Mike Schmidt and Andy Peters did an hour 45. They wouldn't stop talking. And finally I just said, I'm turning it off, you guys. You guys can talk about this for till you grow old, but I'm done listening to it.
So her podcast is Dork Forest.
Dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com,
and
familypetancestry.com. I bought it because it made me laugh.
Family
and
pet
I just pointed
ancestry.
It at my website. Because don't you want to know if your cat came over on the Mayflower? Come on.
Familypetancestry.com.
Don't you want to know if your dog's eligible to join the DAR?
My,
the dogs
my,
of the American
my
Revolution.
My joke is my wife's so redneck, her parents met on AncestryMingle.com. check her out. And you're the best. Thank you so much.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.